Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Dizzy Gillespie was cool and spontaneous. Was he in a state of ooh-we? Are you? My next guest is a scholar of Chinese thought and comparative religion, and in a new book, he singles out the philosophy of living in a state of effortless action. Edward Swingerland is now the author of Trying Not to Try, The Art and Science of Spontaneity. He's also a professor of Asian Studies and the Canada Research Chair in Chinese Thought and Embodied Cognition, how's that for a job title, at the University of British Columbia. Welcome to WNYC, Professor Swingerland.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Is all that on your business card?
Yeah, I got to make that title up too.
Let's get right into Uwe, spelled W-U-W-E. The literal translation is no trying. What is it exactly?
Yeah, so the literal translation is no trying, but I think a better translation is effortless action. So it's the state where you really lose a sense of exerting effort, you lose a sense of self-consciousness, you get absorbed into whatever it is you're doing, and yet everything works perfectly. So if you're doing some physical skill, you're perfectly skillful. If you're in a social situation, you negotiate it perfectly gracefully. Everything works the way it should, even though you feel like you're not really doing anything.
And we have an excerpt from your book on our website. Folks, you can read it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And it's about this famous story of Butcher Ding and his state of ooh-we. What's the story? What's the context?
Yeah, so the butcher is probably, it's probably a public ceremony. So very high stakes public ceremony. He's got a huge crowd. The Lord is watching. And he's facing this enormous ox, and he's got to cut it up. And he seems to go into some trance, and it sounds like he's singing or dancing or playing music, and this ox just falls apart at his feet.
This is an odd story for contemporary times. We're talking about a dead ox just lying there, and a butcher needs some special state of grace in order to cut it up.
Hey, if you've ever seen an ox, you understand why this is an amazing feat. So the Lord says, you know, this is amazing. How does skill get this wonderful? And the butcher says it's not about skill. It's about the Tao, the way. And he describes how, you know, when I first started cutting up oxen, I would think about it. I'd analyze where I was going to cut. I would, try to think about it too much. But I finally get to a state where he says, I shut down my senses. I shut down my conscious mind. And I let my spiritual desires take me away.
But when you talk about spontaneity in this way, this is different than what a lot of our listeners may have thought we were going to talk about, which might be like, oh, I don't know, just deciding to go to the airport one morning and buying a ticket on the next flight out and see where you wind up.
Yeah, so it's not just bubbly, hey, let's do whatever we want. It's the concept of it's spontaneity in the sense of reacting properly to the world. So it's about being actually in touch with the world in some kind of effective way.
Listeners, any questions about spontaneity? There are people whose objective in their job is not to think too much. Edward Swingerland writes about people who do improv, like the Upright Citizens Brigade, you know them, who don't think. We've talked about jazz musicians a little bit already. He also writes about athletes who get in the zone and in a state of ooh-we. Are you one of those people, or do you strive for that? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You know who's a good example in sports? I don't think you mentioned him in the book. The new Zen president of the Knicks, Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
As a coach, what he likes to get his players to do is, through a lot of practice, it's not effortless to get there, a lot of practice, develop this perfect harmony as a five-man unit and then start improvising with the ball.
Yep.
So it's really ooh-we in the way you describe it.
Yeah, so the key, I mean, it's intensive training, but you've got to then let the training go, and that's the tricky part. So there's that tension involved in letting go of your skill and actually just acting out your skill. And I think that athletes, actors, all sorts of performers are acutely aware of the power of spontaneity and the tensions involved in getting it. And one of the points of the book is to say, actually, all of us face this situation. It's, trying to fall asleep when you have insomnia, trying to relax when you're doing a radio show. We all have this problem, and so we could adapt some of these techniques the early Chinese.
Do we all? Is there, for your own work, an ooh-we of college professoring?
Sure. I mean, if you're not, when you get up to lecture in front of 200 kids, if you're not in some kind of state of oué, it doesn't go very well. That's crucial to actually most of our lives.
And you put this in the Chinese context, ancient Chinese context. Is it fundamentally different from any concept that we have in Western society?
Yeah, so there is this concept of flow developed by Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, popularized in the 90s, and it's similar. So it's you lose a sense of yourself, you are very effective, time passes very quickly. But for the early Chinese, it's not about complexity and challenge, which is what Csikszentmihalyi thinks flow is about. It's about being absorbed into something larger than yourself. And often very simple. So we get into Uwe when we're relaxing with our family or we're walking down a path in a park that we really like. So it's not always about high-stakes challenge, rock climbing, elite basketball. It's Uwe is also in these very simple activities where we lose a sense of ourselves.
But you do deal in the book with the paradox of trying not to try.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a tension involved in using your conscious mind to shut your conscious mind off. So I argue it's actually a genuine paradox, which is why no one of these strategies developed in early China ever wins out. So I think they explore the logical possibilities of how you could try not to try. They come up with a lot of great techniques, and probably which ones are useful is going to vary from situation to situation and person to person. Because it's a real tension and there is no knockdown solution to it.
But is it practice, practice, practice? Is it Zen in the art of archery? Once you've done it 1,000 times, 10,000 times, 10 million times, then you're not thinking about how you're holding your shoulder and exactly the angle at which you're cocking the bow. Then you get into that effortless state, but it's from practice, practice, practice?
Yeah, that's the Confucian strategy. And yes, that we often get into it that way. But what do you do if you're the archer and you're standing there and you know you need to relax and yet you're not? And that's where the Taoist techniques
come in.
Is
there an answer to that question?
Well, you've got, you got to shut your mind down. You have to make your mind empty. And so the Taoists develop various techniques for relaxing you or making your mind empty so that the skill that you've developed can actually have room to play itself out.
Edward Slingelin, author of Trying Not to Try, The Art and Science of Spontaneity. And since we've inserted jazz musicianship into this conversation already, let's take a call from Doug on Long Island, who says he's a jazz musician. Hi, Doug.
How are you?
Okay.
I just wanted to speak to the preparation aspect of the idea of, I guess, trying not to try. As a jazz musician, you work so hard and so long on rudiments and on scales and on everything that has to do with regimented, sincere and focused practice, so that when you perform, you can let all of that go and everything that you've worked on that has become a part of you just flows out naturally and you can react appropriately.
Yeah. No. So I've learned a lot about Uwe from my brother-in-law, who's a jazz pianist in Rome, and watching him perform. So he is an incredibly well-trained, classically trained pianist, and that's what allows him to – the technique that he's developed is what then allows him to let the technique go. His ability to – he's got an album called I'll Be Bach, and it's him starting out playing Bach straight and then doing weird things to it, slowing it down, speeding it up, improvising on top of it. And it sounds wonderful because he's so mastered the form that he can play with it.
Thanks for your call, Doug. Nick in Woodbridge, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Brian. Always enjoy the show. I'm glad you're talking about musicians, too. I've been a professional musician all my life. And I would call it playing from feel. I'm not a jazz musician. We're jamming and playing from feel.
Mm-hmm.
But my point, what brought to mind, I used to have a sales job during the day because my night gig wasn't holding enough water, you know what I mean? So I'd be running around, hustling on the street, selling this stuff. And one particular Friday, I'll never forget it, things were like just flying. I sold stuff to guys walking dogs. I sold, everything was just flying. It was almost, if I touched it, it went to the next guy I saw. And it was going great. I had my brother with me, and we were cracking up. It was going so good. And I'm riding down a highway, and all of a sudden, I'm looking at him, and I ducked. And then I sat back up, and then a bird hit the windshield.
Wow.
Oh.
And I said to myself, I think I got out ahead of it. You know what I mean?
I didn't think that's where that story was going.
Yeah.
Is that too much Uwe?
No. So the interesting thing, so another important concept I look at in the book is this, unfortunately it's pronounced duh in Chinese. It sounds kind of dumb, but it's charismatic virtue, charismatic power. And so the early Chinese think one of the reasons they want to get into Uwe is they think when you're in that state, you have this charismatic power over other people. And it sounds like when you were in the zone selling, that's where you were at. People wanted to buy from you because you had this thing. And that's what they the Chinese thought, this is what you needed to succeed religiously and professionally and politically.
So. Nick, thank you for your call. And that notion of duh, that charisma that people in a state of Uwe have, does come up a lot in politics. Like they say Mitt Romney had no duh.
Yeah. And the problem is you saw him in the campaign at times trying to get duh, you know, actively trying to seem cool and relaxed, and that never works. People who are trying to be cool are not cool.
Andrew in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to add, there's a word that I heard of. It's an old Italian word used during the Renaissance to denote effortless ease. It was called sprezzatura. Yeah. And they talked about Raphael, for instance, how he could paint with this amazing ease and just seemed to do it without even trying. And so they coined this word. And so it's one similar concept, it seemed to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's one of the few other words, sprezzatura, that I think captures this combination of spontaneity and attractiveness, because part of that is you are you're appealing because of your kind of insouciance and yet skill. So, that's a great word.
Mary Nell in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi there. I am an actor, and I have found to get in the Uwe, a lot of times it's the easiest when I'm tired. Like I've been working or exercising, I'm really tired. It feels like I'm not in my head as much. I wonder if you found that. And then secondly is, also, like once every 6 months, I'll get in this place where I think everything's just going right, the world's where it should be, and then when I recognize it, it goes away.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wonder if you have any thoughts about those two.
Yeah. So I talk a little bit about the work on hypoprefrontality. So basically, the part of your brain that's in charge of monitoring things and paying attention consciously is your prefrontal cortex. And one of the ways to downregulate it is alcohol. Another way to downregulate it is intense exercise. So there's good work on when you're tired, you actually are tiring out that monitoring part of your brain. And that can often then allow you to get into Uwe a lot easier. And then what was the second point again?
It was recognizing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that's deadly. So
yeah.
The worst thing for Uwe is when you're – and actually it seems – so in the Butcher Ding story it seems that he falls out of Uwe when he has to try to explain to this lord how he does it.
Mm-hmm.
But how cruel the universe. Once you achieve enlightenment, you can't sit back and enjoy
it. Yeah, yeah. So you enjoy it at some kind of meta level. But as soon as you start consciously reflecting on it, you've killed it.
Mary Nell, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
And you note that there's no single technique for achieving Uwe. And this idea of letting go to achieve some kind of creative bliss comes up all the time on the show, I have to say. We have Bob Mankoff, the cartoon editor of The New Yorker, on the other day, and I asked him about the key to winning the cartoon caption contest. And he said, practice, 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 then have a whiskey, smoke a cigarette, and take a shower,
yeah.
And it'll come to you.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. So the practice is crucial. I think one of the problems in our society is we don't realize that last stage often enough. So we tend to think if we're running into a creative, you know, we have a problem, we have to come up with a creative solution to something, we keep pushing at it and pushing at it. And actually, typically what you need to do at that point is have a whiskey and go for a walk or take a bath and let your unconscious mind that's been trained up by all that practice, 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 do its thing and not get in the way of it.
You did say a minute ago that intense physical exercise and drinking can have the same effect?
Yeah. No, so Zhuangzi, one of these Taoist thinkers, talks about being drunk on heaven. And he actually uses drunkenness as a metaphor for being in the state of Uwe. And there's something to that. So one of the functions of alcohol and other intoxicants is to downregulate your prefrontal cortex. And there's something to be said. The first time I ever had to give a lecture when I was a graduate student, I had to talk to 150 students. and I was terrified. And it was on Zhuangzi, actually. It was on Uwe. And it was 10 o'clock in the morning. I brought a little shot of vodka with me and a vial and took a shot before I went out there. It was perfect. Took the edge off.
10 o'clock in the morning.
10 o'clock in the morning.
I won't tell if you
Yeah, know. Don't tell. Don't tell my advisor. But, yeah, it worked. And then I never had to do it again. So you get past that barrier. But so there's a lot of different ways. Exercise. Everyone's got their own technique for shutting their conscious mind down.
John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hello, thanks for having me. I'm an Alexander teacher as well, and I'm as well as a musician, and I've found that the Alexander technique helps me artificially put myself in this state of mind, or not artificially, but consciously allows me to put myself in this state. And it's interesting because it looks at the connection of the mind and body, how to quiet the mind, be giving intention with the for the body to do things, but also get out of the way of micromanaging them. So I was just wondering if you've ever had any experience with these mind-body techniques.
I took a little Alexander, and I thought it was great. And it was, for me, with a lot of dancers in the class, and I'm not a dancer, but I kind of got, I think, and John, tell me if this is a decent interpretation of it, that for the dancers in particular, this is not about the technique of doing your pliés and things like that. This is about really being aware of your body, really being aware of your spine and your center and, you know, every appendage, and just aware of how it feels and how it's interacting with the other parts of your body and kind of with your centeredness, the uwe.
Yes, that's right. And also how the mental state of the mind actually affects the state of the body. So if you're in turmoil in your mind, then your body tends to be very bound up, and vice versa.
Athletes do the same thing, and you can
So there's a huge paradox involved in using your mind to shut down your mind. And so most of the effective techniques for getting you into uwe try to get around that by using the body as a tool. So you use your body to distract yourself from this mental paradox.
Thanks, John. We're almost out of time. I noticed that Amy Chua, known as the Tiger Mom, blurbed your book.
Yeah.
Is there an uwe way to parent? I mean, tiger parent would be, you know, more clenched than cool, very undue, I would think.
Yeah, so it depends on how you look at that. So I think the part that appealed to her was the Confucian strategy of training and ritual, giving people structure. And one way to look at that is you can't really be spontaneous until you've done the practice. And so it's possible to err in, for instance, education with too little structure. So kids don't have enough structure, and so they don't develop the skills that they can then do in a new way fashion. The danger is the training just becomes drill, and you never get out of the rote kind of grinding your way through it.
But I guess there could be a new way or a duh of setting limits.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well as of just being laid back.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying Not to Try, The Art and Science of Spontaneity by Edward Slingerland. Thank you very much for joining us. Great conversation.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun.